Tennessee, Pearl, and Axel reporting. So we'll enjoy that. Make sure you stay tuned. John's full phonology report coming up at 7:20.
Support for KEXE comes from the Minnesota Historical Society. The Forest History Center in Grand Rapids is now open Fridays and Saturdays from 10 a.m. until 4 p.m. Fall hours, including horse-drawn trolley and kayak tours, run through October 19th. Tickets and more info at mnhs.info/forestautumn.
Coming up, we've got the Up North Report. This is 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd, and on your smart speaker. We are telling the stories of northern Minnesota through music, news, conversation, and events. We're expecting cloudy skies, then clearing with highs 48 to 53. Clear skies tonight, lows 21 to 33, and mostly sunny tomorrow, highs in the upper 50s to low 60s.
For KAXE News, I'm Chelsea Perkins with the Up North Report. The St. Louis County Sheriff's Office and the rescue squad located two lost hikers in a remote area of Bearhead State Park on Saturday. According to a news release, one of the hikers called 911 shortly after 6 p.m., but poor cell coverage in the area meant deputies could not make contact. St. Louis County dispatchers were able to get GPS coordinates, however, and the hiker placed a second call where they were told to stay put. Responders used a drone to locate the hikers, and rescue squad members walked to them and guided them out of the woods. The hikers were visiting the area and were not familiar with the park's rough terrain. Neither needed medical attention, but they were not prepared to spend the night in the woods, according to a news release. Lake County is facing a double-barreled legal action that is likely to throw a virtual hand grenade into the planned development of a resort property. The Timberjay newspaper reports the 62-acre parcel, located on the narrows between Farm and White Iron Lakes, has been the subject of intense local controversy over a planned redevelopment that would greatly increase the density of residential units and increase vehicle and boat traffic at the site. Local property owners and residents organized under the name Community Advocates for Responsible Development, or CARD, and they have filed suit against the proposal earlier this month. The suit alleges that the Lake County Planning Commission knowingly violated county ordinances and state law when it approved a conditional use permit and preliminary plat for Silver Rapids Lodge. Those approvals allowed far greater density of development at the site than allowed. Later that same day, the Department of Natural Resources filed its own lawsuit, making similar allegations. Timberjay publisher Marshall Helmberger says citizens expressed concern over the development given the rural nature of Lake County.
It was very clear that the county had been told repeatedly by both legal counsel for the citizens group as well as by the DNR that they were not, you know, in compliance with, or at least the proposal was not in compliance with their ordinance or the law. And for them to just go ahead and approve it anyway, you know, at the density that the developers have requested is really pretty astonishing.
Included in CARD's court filing are exhibits that plaintiffs believe show that the Planning Commission knew the conditional use permit they approved in September was in violation. Minnesota is in its first cold snap of the fall season, with snow even falling in far northeastern Minnesota over the weekend, and a new law aims to protect renters from thermostat hangups with their landlord. It coincides with renewed calls for residents in need to tap into heating bill assistance. Mike Moen of Minnesota News Connection has the story.
A new state law requires landlords to ensure inside temperatures within rental units don't go below 68 degrees between October and the end of April. And for households struggling to keep up with heating costs, local offices are again assisting with applications for the state's Energy Assistance Program, which helps cover those expenses. Nicole Paulson of the Southeastern Minnesota Community Action Agency says it gives families financial breathing room.
They're able to maybe pay more towards groceries, or their kids are allowed to do a sporting event that they wouldn't have been able to do.
Just a few years ago, Minnesota expanded income eligibility for this type of aid. For example, a household of four can earn up to $68,000 a year and still qualify. Last year, offices under the Minnesota Community Action Partnership Network processed nearly 200,000 energy assistance applications. And even though consumer prices have cooled, Paulson says some households may still be feeling the effects of inflation and are considering this type of aid for the first time. She says offices like hers can make the application process less stressful.
We in the office here determine your eligibility, and based on that, you are awarded a grant.
The typical grant is around $500 and goes straight to the utility provider to apply to your heating costs. Minnesota has a long-standing cold weather rule, which prevents utility disconnections during the winter, so long as customers behind on their bills work out a reasonable payment plan with their utility. This is Mike Moen for Minnesota News Connection.
That's it for the Up North Report from the KAXE News Desk. I'm Chelsea Perkins, telling the stories of Northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report on KAXE is made possible by Woodland Bank, providing customers with personal and business banking solutions, as well as offering Kasasa checking accounts. You can learn more online at woodland.bank.
Coming up, we'll have more news from National Public Radio. I'm Heidi Holton. John Latimer joins me via Zoom this morning. He's in the midst of school visits this week in Twin Cities, southern Minnesota, Piers, it sounds like. So lots of places you'll be headed, huh, John?
Yeah. I'll be down in Northfield this morning after we're done here. And then I'll be going, tomorrow morning I'll be on my way up to Pierce, and we'll talk with some kids there and hopefully encourage them to start submitting reports. 11 isn't enough, really. We need more. We receive support from North Homes Children and Family Services, providing compassionate mental health services to children and families at home, school, and in the community. More information at northhomes.org.
Coming up about 8:10 this morning, Tornado Bob is our guest. We'll talk big weather.
Community Radio Board of Directors meets the fourth Monday of every month. If you have questions or are interested in joining the board, contact us at 326-1234 during business hours. The board's full meeting schedule is available online at kaxe.org.
High temperatures today, 48 to 53.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm A. Martinez in Los Angeles, California.
And I'm Michelle Martin in Washington, D.C. Good morning. Coming up, a Trump appointee turned critic turned supporter again. We'll hear from former Ambassador Gordon Sondland, who testified in Donald Trump's first impeachment trial.
First, Vice President Kamala Harris is on a push this week to court black voters, specifically men.
While black voters overwhelmingly back the Democratic ticket, black men are not showing as much enthusiasm for Harris as they did for the Democratic nominee when President Biden ran in 2020 or when former President Barack Obama ran before him. And as some black men gravitate toward former President Donald Trump, Democrats are concerned that even in small numbers, this could cut into Harris's chances in key swing states.
NPR's White House correspondent Deepa Shivaram is traveling with Harris, joins us now from Detroit, Michigan. So Deepa, Harris is rolling out new policy proposals focused on black men. She's going to be talking about it today. What's on the agenda?
So she's going to talk about a lot of proposals with an economic lens, and she has a big focus on entrepreneurs. So part of this plan is to give 1 million loans to black entrepreneurs and others up to $20,000, and those loans are forgivable. She also says she'll legalize recreational marijuana and make sure there's a role for black entrepreneurs in that business. And Harris says she'll do more as president to try and protect cryptocurrency assets. And she points to how more than 20% of black Americans own or have owned crypto.
Okay, so that's the message. How is she going to get that message out?
So she'll be talking about her plans today at a town hall she's doing with radio host Charlemagne the God. He's one of the hosts of the popular morning show The Breakfast Club. It airs on stations across the country and is popular among younger black people in particular. It's a show candidates running for president often appear on. And Charlemagne can be a tough interviewer. You know, he's been critical of Democratic candidates in the past, like with President Biden when he was a candidate for president back in 2020.
Last week, former President Barack Obama said he thinks black men are having an issue with voting for a woman for president. How is Kamala Harris responding to that?
You know, she was asked about Obama's comments by the Shade Room, which is also very popular with Black audiences. And she didn't really acknowledge anything about her polls that have been showing some weakness with Black men. But she did say, in essence, that she doesn't take anyone's vote for granted just because of who she is. Take a listen.
Black men are no different from anybody else. They expect that you have to earn their vote. And that's why I'm out here doing the work that I'm doing about talking with folks, listening with folks.
And, you know, this is an election that's going to be so, so close. We keep saying it. So Harris has to drum up enthusiasm and support from her base voters, even as she also tries to spend time here trying to appeal to independent voters and Republican voters. And that's something we saw from her last night at a rally.
Where was that rally at?
So we were in Erie, Pennsylvania. It's a pivot county. So it went twice for Obama, then Trump in 2016, and then Biden last time around. And Harris did something new last night. She had a giant video screen, and she played a kind of highlight reel of things that Trump has said recently that her campaign feels haven't been getting enough attention. And in these final weeks, you know, they're trying to break through to moderate Republican voters and independents and say, you know, hey, there are some things that Trump is saying that are dangerous. Particularly his recent comments that if he wins the election, the National Guard or even the military could be used to handle what he called, quote, the enemy within. In other words, his opponents. And, you know, I've been to a lot of Harris's rallies. This highlight reel approach was a first, and we'll see if she uses it again later this week.
All right. So Erie, Pennsylvania last night, in Detroit today. Where does she go next?
She'll be ping-ponging around the blue wall states this week, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin. She's doing a lot more interviews as well, including a big one coming up tomorrow. She's sitting down with Fox News host Bret Baier, and it's her first time ever interviewing with the network.
That's NPR's Deepa Shivram. Thanks, Deepa.
Thank you.
A witness in one of former President Trump's impeachment trials says he is supporting him this fall. Gordon Sondland is a Republican donor and Trump's former ambassador to the European Union. He was drawn into Trump's effort to get the Ukrainian president to help Trump dig up dirt on Trump's political opponents. He spoke with our co-host, Steve Inske.
Ambassador Sondland gave this affirmation under oath in 2019.
Was there a quid pro quo? The answer is yes.
5 years later, Sondland has reevaluated.
I realized that that particular impeachment was much ado about nothing.
He still says there was a quid pro quo, but that it wasn't such a big deal. When Trump tried to overturn his election defeat, Ambassador Sondland said he was done with the former president. He says he changed because the Biden administration is that bad on issues like immigration and much more. Our conversation was a chance to hear Sondland make the case for Trump, even though he acknowledges the attack on the Capitol in 2021.
What changed my mind about January 6th, as much as I thought it was not anyone's finest hour, was 4 years of Biden-Harris governance, which has literally begun to destroy many cities in the United States. And the list goes on and on and on.
I want to ask about those impressions you have of the Biden-Harris administration. But first, I want to dwell on former President Trump. Given what you felt about January 6th, what is the affirmative case for giving Trump once again the awesome powers of the presidency?
I've had the benefit of having worked with him one-on-one for about 2.5, almost 3 years, and then watching what I refer to as the Trump show, which is the hyperbole, the rallies, all the histrionics that everyone criticizes. And I look at how he performed one-on-one and how he governed, how he made decisions, what was actually happening to the country while he was president. The country was in good shape. Our allies, while they may not have loved us because we spoke truth to power, they respected us. And a lot of that has evaporated, Steve.
I just want to note, because you talked about working with him one-on-one, I don't doubt that you did, but I'm thinking about his own public statements. Before the impeachment trial, he did refer to you as a great American. After it became clear that you were testifying against him, in a sense, he said, I don't know this guy very well.
That's Trump. He was the one who told me when I said the committee wants me to testify, he said, go ahead, just tell the truth, which I did.
In more recent times, he has made a lot of statements that have troubled people. He said he is justified in terminating the Constitution. He said he won't be a dictator except on day one. Do you believe that he wants to be a dictator and terminate the Constitution?
Absolutely not. That's not what he's actually saying. He engages in this hyperbole, and I'm not going to explain or defend every one of his utterances. What I can tell you when he says things like, for example, I'm going to solve the Ukraine-Russia problem in 24 hours. Of course, he's not going to resolve it in 24 hours. But what he's saying really is, this is going to get resolved quickly. I'm going to essentially beat the out of both sides to come to an understanding and make that war go away. That's what he's really saying.
Two questions about that. First, are you sure you know when he's making it up and when he's being truthful?
I don't believe he's lying. I believe he loves hyperbole. He's a New York real estate developer. That's in the DNA.
People thought it was hyperbole about him trying to overturn the 2020 election, and it turned out he really meant it all the way through, tried until almost the last day, and still keeps repeating that he wants to overturn the election.
I told you earlier, I'm not defending that. I don't think it was his finest hour.
As regards that matter of Ukraine, an area where you have some expertise, can you imagine any way to quickly get, as you say, both sides to agree to a peace deal that would not be effectively a victory for Russia and a defeat for Ukraine?
Well, I don't want to see, just so you understand my own personal perspective, I don't want to see Russia rewarded by one square mile of Ukrainian territory. And I want to see Ukraine win. But I think what really would scare Russia to death is Trump becoming president and basically telling Zelensky, listen, all the gloves are off. You can use the weapons as they're intended. We're not going to tell you who to shoot at or when to shoot. I think Putin knows that he's screwed short of a nuclear exchange if that were to happen.
I want to come back to some of your feelings about the Biden-Harris administration. You mentioned federal policies, administration policies that have destroyed cities. I travel to a lot of American cities. They have their problems. They go up and down. There are crime issues. But the cities are not destroyed in this country. Not one city.
Well, I can tell you one that is Portland, Oregon, where I'm from.
Destroyed.
Destroyed.
I mean, there have been protests.
When I say destroyed, I mean economically destroyed. I don't mean physically destroyed. The buildings are standing. The streets are relatively clean, but they've become cadavers of their former selves, Steve, economically. And it's because of the lack of willpower by very left-leaning administrations to enforce the law, to allow businesses to do their business without shoplifting, and basically to do what cities have been doing for decades.
While you're talking, I did a Google search here for the unemployment rate currently in Portland, Oregon, and it's 4%.
The employment rate is high, but the city is dying. Just walk the streets and you'll see, and you can walk the streets of many cities that are dying. Because of hybrid work, because of encouraging people not to come back to the office. And that starts with county and municipal government.
Oh, I've seen that in downtowns. Is that the responsibility of the Biden administration?
No, it's not the responsibility of the Biden administration per se, Steve. It's a entire progressive movement, and the Biden administration exemplifies that.
One final thing to ask about, given what you know about the January 6th attack on the Capitol, if Trump were elected again, what reason would you have for thinking that he would ever give up power at the end of his term?
I would assume that he would. I would assume that he would.
Ambassador Sondland, thanks so much. Appreciate your time.
Thank you, Steve. Enjoyed it.
This is NPR News.
Good morning. It is 7:19. We've been listening to National Public Radio's Morning Edition. This is KAXE. We're member-supported radio in northern Minnesota. I'm Heidi Holton with John Latimer. We've got Phonology.
Morning, Heidi.
Good morning. Phonology coming up next. You couldn't get more local than that. We'll find out what's changing.
Yeah. Yeah, there are some startling notes this week.
We are expecting cloudy skies for our day. It's going to clear off later today. Highs 48 to 53, mostly clear tonight, 21 to 33. And tomorrow, Wednesday, mostly sunny with highs in the upper 50s to low 60s by, looks like Thursday or Friday. We'll check with Bob later, but I'm seeing even upper 60s. So sounding nice. Yeah.
Yeah, very nice for mid-October. I'm not sure just what to make of this.
Yeah.
You'll hear in the report about other years when we've had a late warm fall. 2013 comes to mind. One of the coldest, longest winters we ever suffered. latest spring we ever suffered. And we had a late fall that year.
John, I did my latest jump in the lake last week.
Wow. And excellent.
I don't know. It took so much to push myself off the boat. I'm telling you. But I did it.
Yeah, but once you were in, what did you think?
It didn't feel great. It felt great when I got out. I mean, I wasn't cold. It was weird. It was just so bracing that I got out and, you know, I'm glad I did it, but it was not a full on swim. I kicked around a little bit and then, you know, I had a little scream underwater as you do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The body is just like, I remember coming out of a sauna one day, and this was after I'd been skating on the same lake at the other end of the lake, and I came out of a sauna and dove into open water, and there was a loud scream inside my body when I was underwater, which I'm sure no one but me heard, but my body was definitely shocked by the experience. So
this is what I've learned, is don't trust the person that jumps in before you. They're almost always lying. They say, oh, it's not bad. It's not bad at all.
It's really nice.
Uh-huh. Don't trust them.
Yeah, I think I agree with you there. There's some, you know, misery loves company.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. We've got Phenology coming up next for you at 9 o'clock this morning. It is Sarasara on the river.
I look forward to it. Is it time?
It is almost time here for Phenology. We would like to thank our business supporters.
Yeah. Support comes from the Timberlake Lodge in Grand Rapids, offering an endless soup and salad bar for lunch and burgers and hand-cut steaks for dinner online at TimberlakeLodgeHotel.com. And programming is supported by Empty Bowls, fighting local hunger and building a stronger community with the Grand Rapids and Deer River Community Cafe. The event takes place Thursday, October 24th at Timberlake Lodge from 11 to 2 and from 4 to 7. Tickets include soup and a locally made ceramic bowl. More info on Facebook at Itasca Empty Bowls Project. It's time for the Phenology Show. Phenology is the rhythmic biological nature of events as they relate to climate. And we're going to start off today with just a little rundown of some of the trees that I observe regularly, including a pin cherry, which is in my backyard. And that pin cherry is just now bare of leaves. The last of the leaves probably have fallen off while I was on my way down to the cities. But on Sunday morning, there were, well, you could have counted them. I didn't bother, but I'm sure it was less than a dozen. So that was like 12 days later than the average bare tree for the pin cherry. So that was a bit of a drag. We are experiencing kind of a late fall. I have a yellow birch in my yard, one that I planted, maybe 10 years ago. It's getting quite large now. And in this last week, it lost most of its leaves. It was bright yellow, on last Sunday, a week ago Sunday, it was bright yellow. And by Friday, when I went out and looked at my observation, when I studied the tree on Friday to make my observations, it was down to a few leaves, dozens, but probably more than you could count. But you could definitely tell that there had been a great exodus of leaves from the yellow birch. Red maples, the red maples were probably at their peak of color last week, at least at my house. And remember, all phenology is local. What happens at your house is not going to be the same thing that's happening at my house. But for the most part, I had the red maples in my yard at peak of color last Monday or Tuesday, which was the 8th. And the average date over the 41 years that I've been watching, the average date for peak of color for red maples is the 21st of September. Now, the latest that I ever saw it was the 11th of October, and that was in 2013. Now, to be clear, October of 2013 was long past that very late spring of 2013, but 2014 was an equally delayed spring. In fact, in some cases, in the case of the aspens, the leaf out date for the aspens in the spring of 2013 was the latest ever, and then 2014 exceeded that by one day. So 13 and 14 were both late spring. So the fact that we're having a late fall is no guarantee for the kind of winter we will be having. And the fact that our red maples weren't at peak until the 8th of October this year means absolutely nothing concerning the coming winter. So all I can say is buckle up and enjoy it. Get out there and make use of all of that wonderful winter that is in front of us. And it includes a lot of great activities that I enjoy, and I'm sure most of you who are listening probably have some things that you like to do in the winter as well. Cross-country skiing, snowshoeing, skating, ice boating, it doesn't matter. There's just a million things to do. Just walk around and look at the birch seeds laying on top of the snow. It'll all happen in its own pace, and we will talk about it when it's over, and hopefully we won't marvel at how late the spring was. Hopefully we'll have a normal spring. The silver maple in my yard is at its peak of color. The silver maples are really hard to judge because back in late August, early September, leaves began to fall from my silver maple. The tree looked green as an apple, but it was dropping leaves here and there. And finally, on the 8th or 9th, I put it at peak color. It was more yellow than green, and the leaves are falling wholesale. I always know when the silver maple is really throwing off leaves because I start to see the leaves inside the house. They fall on the deck and they get tracked into the house. And I noticed a few silver maple leaves blowing around inside the house. So it is definitely the season for the silver maple. And that is 17 days later than the average peak color. The speckled alders, those swamp plants that never show any color other than green, the leaves are green until the day they fall. They are down, the average date for bare speckled alder bare trees is the 12th of October. And as of the 8th, or no, it was the 11th that I looked at them, they were down to their last, maybe quarter of their total leaf structure. So well on their way to being bare, probably are going to be bare by this weekend. I will report on them next week for sure. The aspens, the trembling aspens, are oftentimes bright yellow this time of year. This is average peak of color for trembling aspens. I have several clones of aspens around my yard. Some are absolutely at their peak color right now. Some are bare. I've already reached their peak and fallen. And then there's this cohort of females. They're a clone, and they are all very old. One of them contains an eagle's nest, and many of them have been homes to pileated woodpeckers over the years. You may recall a conversation we had with Mike North about pileated woodpeckers and their affection for aspens that are over 60 years old. These are large aspens, and they are, the last I looked on Saturday, they were a mixture of yellow and green. They were still not yet to full color, and that's just their phenology. That's just how they operate. So that group is just coming into color, where nearby there's another clone of younger aspens, and they are completely bare. And there are aspens in my yard that are at their peak of color right now. And all of that is fairly interesting. Joel Rosen sent me a nice note about observations that he had made in the Mottawa area. And I won't have time to go through it all. But one of the things that he noticed, and one of the things that actually after he mentioned it came to my eye, and that was the consonance of the peak of color of the aspens and the peak of color of the maples. Typically, the maples are at least a week, sometimes 10 or 12 days ahead of the aspens in terms of color peak. But this warm fall has pushed the maples later, and the aspens are about where they should be. But the two of them being near their peak at the same time is very unusual. And Joel, thank you for that note. And it's something that I had seen but hadn't put much credence in. But I think if you check it out, you'll probably see the same thing near your house. The big tooth aspens at my house are just starting to show some color. They're probably about 25% color. The interesting thing, the big tooth aspen and the trembling aspen, though they're cousins, they have markedly different phenologies. The big tooth aspens leaf out later, like 3 weeks later than the trembling aspens in the springtime. And in the fall, the big tooth aspens hold their leaves longer. And this is the case at my house anyway. And the big tooth aspens are simply now just beginning to develop some remarkable color. The interesting thing about big tooth aspens is that some years they exhibit a lot of red. They get really, really almost blaze orange leaf color, and they can be spectacular in certain years. And there's a tinge of red among my big tooth aspen, so I'm going to be watching them very closely. There's a horse chestnut that is growing along the river road on my way in and out of town, and I've been watching it for many, many, many years. And it averages its peak of color on the 22nd of September. And this year I had it at peak of color on the 8th of October. In 2015, I had it on the 2nd of October, and in 2009, I had it on the 5th of October. But this is really the latest that I've ever had the horse chestnut reach its peak of color. Tamaracks are averaging yellow around the 14th of October, and the tamaracks around my house are starting to approach. I wouldn't say they're at their peak yet. There's still a lot of green in them. And if you go to the upland tamaracks, those that are growing out of the swamps, they are just starting to show some color among their needles. So check those out. In the shrub layer, just walking through the woods, three plants caught my eye. Just stunning. One, the roundleaf dogwoods. They run from a sort of a corally orange red to deep red and burgundy. Their leaves are big, and they're really quite ostentatious right now. The American hazel is also quite spectacular right now, with bright orange leaves on it. Remember, the American hazel gets red and the beaked hazel gets yellow. So if you have hazels around your house, now's a good time to sort them out, figure out which one is which. And the third plant that really caught my eye are the blackberries. And blackberries, this time of year, they're largely green, but they're starting to change, and they're getting more and more burgundy, and they really are becoming quite spectacular as well. So check out those three plants, those three shrub layer plants that are going to be really spectacular. One of the things about blackberry that I got to looking at it because some students and I were looking them over. The blackberry is remarkably well defended. It has some really solid thorns on it. And if you look carefully, you'll see that those thorns continue right up the mid vein of the leaf. So the leaf even has thorns on its underside, which makes them really, really grabby if you happen to walk by them. I'm going to wrap up with a little bit of talk about birds and bees. There have been large flocks of crows in the fields near my house. This is after a bit of an absence. I think the local crows flocked up and then moved south, and I think now I'm seeing large flocks of migrating crows coming through. I saw my first fox sparrows on Sunday morning, and that was 6 days later than average. I have a huge flock of robins marauding my decorative crab apples and eating the berries as fast as they can, eating the apples as fast as they can. They and the ruffed grouse are busy punching those things down. You look at those apples, and they're like as big as the end of your little finger. And I wonder how many of those a robin can hold, and yet the robins are just, they're packing them in. And I ran into the bald eagles. They were stirring around the nest the other day, and I was taking a walk through the woods, and I came across them and startled them. And I thought to myself, well, it kind of startled both of us, but I realized that they probably knew where I was the whole time I was out there. And when I finally got inside their comfort zone, they took off and left. I've been seeing a few bumblebees flying about. I have some New England asters that are blooming this time of year, and there are still some bumblebees there. Saw a bumblebee yesterday down here in Minneapolis. Monarch butterfly. My neighbor Marvin reported a monarch this past week, and of course the kids have seen some monarchs in their reports as well. That's the phenology report for this week. Sorry to go on for so long, but it was a lot of stuff to talk about, and I... happy that we all have a chance to get out and do some observations of our own. Carbon free.
It is 7:37. Thanks so much for tuning in to the Tuesday Morning Show. I'm Heidi Holton with John Latimer. Coming up, we'll have Best Wishes.
We receive support from Minnesota Power, an elite company building a carbon-free future while delivering safe, reliable power. More at mnpower.com/energyforward. Support for KEXE comes from Clockow Brewing Company in Grand Rapids, making 7 years of brewing classic Sherman and British-style beers, as well as modern IPAs and sours, thanking their customers during their anniversary the last week of October by featuring deals at the tap room. More at clockowbrewing.com.
As I said, we've got best wishes, but we're also bringing you some more student phenology reports and then talking big weather with Tornado Bob. John, coming up next week is our Come Home to KEXE Fall Membership Drive, and on Thursday night, dueling trivia nights in our hometowns. On Thursday night, October 24th, we'll be in Bemidji at Bemidji Brewing and in Grand Rapids at Clockow Brewing. 6 p.m. trivia nights. All are invited. Should be a lot of fun.
Sounds like a lot of fun indeed, yeah. We receive support from Edward Jones financial advisor Christina Gallas, taking a personalized approach to investing to serve her clients. More information at edwardjones.com. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
Looking at the weather for today, it's going to be cloudy, then clearing with highs 48 to 53 degrees, mostly clear overnight tonight with 21 to 33, and tomorrow Wednesday, mostly sunny with highs in the upper 50s to low 60s.
It's time now for best wishes. We do our best to wish our friends and neighbors happy birthday and happy anniversary. And for today, October 15th, we have two birthdays. Terry Eddington is having a birthday. Didn't his wife Polly just had a birthday the other day? So happy birthday to both of you. That must be a heck of a party to go to with those two having birthdays back to back like that. And Karen McAvoy is 65 today, and Karen lives in Nashwauk. If you run into Terry or Karen, wish them a happy birthday today.
We are going to take a listen to our album of the week right now. It's by Tucker Zimmerman, a cult folk singer that released his first album in 1969 and mostly disappeared from the public eye when he moved to Belgium in the 70s. He's 83 years old now. It's his 11th album. He's described as a musician's musician. He's a favorite songwriter of David Bowie, Katie Crutchfield of Waxahachie, Angel Olsen, Tyler Childers, and a huge inspiration to Big Thief. In fact, Big Thief are the producers of Dance to Love, the new album out from Tucker Zimmerman. Rubber Band Pancakes, that is our album of the week. Tucker Zimmerman, a cult folk singer, 83 years old, has a brand new album out after people have not heard from him in a long time, except the band Big Thief. They produced this, and you can find more information at our website, kaxe.org. That song is called The Idiot's Maze.
We receive support from Oak Hill Assisted Living in Grand Rapids, providing personalized care in a home setting. More information online at oakhillseniors.com. And we receive support from the Grand Rapids State Bank, proudly serving the Grand Rapids area for 110 years. More at grsb.bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender. It's time to get back to our student phenology reports, Heidi. We've gotten a great number in, and always interesting. Lots of voices and lots of great information. We're going to start today with a group of teachers who were participating in the University of Minnesota's Phenology Investigations in Minnesota Schools program, which was hosted at Long Lake Conservation Center near Palisade.
Hi, we are part of the University of Minnesota's Phenology Investigations in Schools, Northwoods cohort, reporting from the Long Lake Conservation Center near Palisade, Minnesota.
On October 12, 2024, we noticed that the weather was 52 degrees Fahrenheit with a light rain and overcast skies.
The days are getting shorter with the sun setting tonight at 6:31 p.m.
As we hiked around the south side of Long Lake, it was very quiet and calm.
The clouds really made the colors pop. The large leaf asters are holding on to the last of their white petals.
There were many varieties of goldenrod present today on our hike. About 5% were in bloom and 95% were in seed phenophase.
The raspberry shoots were still seen coming up.
There were three white swans on the lake. The beaver activity was non-existent in the area we covered. We are wondering if perhaps they move farther down the lake.
Deer scat is changing from a wet to more pebbled consistency due to their changing diets.
Turkey tom turds are in a letter J shape on the trail near the shredded basswood from a hungry pileated woodpecker.
We also saw fresh drill holes from the woodpeckers within a foot of the ground where the insects are migrating to within the tree trunks, likely due to the changes in temperature.
That was a very nice report. Lots of good things in there. Largely pastures. I saw a few final flowers. A few final flowers of the large-leafed asters, and I haven't seen a goldenrod in bloom at my house, not for quite some time, maybe 2 weeks. And a note about the deer scat, this is the time of year when their scat changes. This is also the time of year when the does will be licking the noses of their fawns to transfer the biology that will allow the newborn fawns, or the new fawns from this year, to have the necessary biota in their gut to digest the woody stems that they're going to be surviving on through the winter. So lots of interesting things happening with the deer right now as well. Our next report comes from Chad Caddett's class at Little Falls Middle School.
This is Corbin CJ reporting for Mr. Cad's class in Little Falls Middle School. This is our phenology report for week of October 13th.
Our first juncos appeared on October 8th and are busy searching for food under our bird feeders. They are competing with the fox and white-throated sparrows on the ground. If you check any outdoor fabric surface like a grill cover, you will find lots of seeds from a variety of plants stuck to the surface.
Tansy flowers are still providing some yellow color to our fields and meadows, but our goldenrods have formed white seeds.
Classmates have found predaceous diving beetles and giant water bugs this week on land.
White-tailed deer are starting to make scrapes in the woods. Large flocks of robins are moving from tree to tree eating fruit.
Black bears are still moving around, and some classmates have still spotted bats in the evenings.
The Asian beetles are gathering around our homes and garages.
Oranges and reds are the dominant colors on the trees in our area this week.
Sandhill cranes are still spotted in fields, not in large numbers, but small groups of pairs.
Black walnut trees have turned yellow, and their fruit is all over the ground. Be careful if you pick them up, as they will stain your fingers brown. One afternoon last week, Mr. Katz noticed a group of tiny insects. They turned out to be minute pirate bugs. a predatory insect that feeds on mites and aphids, and they will bite you if given the opportunity. That is our report for this week. Until next week, keep exploring, keep discovering, and keep connecting with the great outdoors.
Nice report. Mr. Kaditz really has those kids tuned into nature down there, and that is a wonderful, wonderful school and a wonderful report that they sent. The juncos finally got down there. I'm seeing big flocks of juncos around my house and in along the edges of the roads. Remember, the juncos are those little gray birds. When they fly, there are two little white outlines on their tail because the two outside tail feathers on both sides of the tail are white. And the rest is a dark gray. So watch for the juncos. Lots of them around. And they're really well worth following. Bats, I'm happy to hear that there are still some bats flying around. Bats are not like they used to be. That is one area of our environment that has really suffered. And it's kind of... sad to see what has happened to the bats with the white nose fungus that is attacking them in their hibernacula. Sandhill cranes still around and lady beetles. Oh my goodness. The other day it was sunny at my house and the lady beetles were coming in just by the hordes trying to get into the house, trying to crawl into cracks, find a place to spend the winter. I don't look forward to that. Our next report this morning comes from Michelle Martin's class at Prairie Creek Community School in Northfield, Minnesota.
Hi, this is Ellen.
And this is Finley.
We're from Prairie Creek Community School.
Way down south in Northfield, Minnesota.
It's gotten cold down here. We're finally starting to see the leaves changing. Andrew finally saw the first junco on October 12th.
Sahil saw a crane and we're still seeing dragonflies, vultures, and bumblebees.
But we didn't see any herons this week, and we didn't see any toads.
Our classmates reported seeing many rabbits, deer, squirrels, and foxes.
Caroline even saw a fox squirrel.
Henry saw a mouse.
And I saw a hawk.
Sienna saw murmurations of starlings and a lot of seagulls.
Omni saw a flock of small birds flying right over her head.
And finally, Annabelle saw a large pile of walnuts, and now it's gone. Very suspicious.
This has been Prairie Creek.
One more step along the phenology journey.
Thank you, Finley and Ellen. That was a great report, as always. Sandhill cranes down there, mice, and lots of things to look at. The juncos back on the 12th. So we had juncos in Little Falls on the 8th, and 4 days later, we had juncos down in Northfield on the 12th. And so you can see the progression as those birds start to work their way south for the winter. And of course, they're just now starting to see leaf change. And down here in the Minneapolis area, there are some wonderful sugar maples and red maples, Norway maples that are turning. The hackberries are turning down here. But there are a lot of trees that are still largely green. So you can tell just by looking outside your door, wherever you are. You may be here in the south. You may be up there in the north. But fall is definitely proceeding apace. Our final report this week comes from the News Stocks, and this is from Memphis, Tennessee.
Hi, this is Axel.
And Pearl News Stock. Tonight at sunset, we went to the Mississippi River to look west to try and see the comet C-2023-A3.
We couldn't pronounce the name. First, we found Venus, then we saw Arcturus. Then we scanned the sky halfway between the two.
Finally, it got dark and we could see the smudge.
It got brighter and sank closer to the horizon.
Have you seen the comet in Minnesota?
We heard about the northern lights, but we couldn't see any. How were they?
We wanted to give a shout out to Ruth in Spain. Bye!
Hola, Ruth. Ruth is in Spain. How thrilling. And they had a thrilling moment there to see Sinchuchan, the comet A3 that is in the west just after sunset. And as they told you, it look for Venus, and then the first bright star going west, going north, actually, clockwise from Venus, you're going to see a bright star called Arcturus. And about halfway between those two bright objects, you will find Sinchuchan, the comet that is now visible in the evening sky. And you're going to need a wide open view to the west, because it is low on the horizon. These objects are very close to the horizon. So if you're like me and you live in the forest, you're just not going to get a very good look at them. Those are our student reports for this week. That has been a real blessing to have that many observations come to us from across the country, across the state of Minnesota. And as always, if you would like to join this parade of observations, there's nothing stopping you. Just get out there, observe, put it in a report, and send it to us. We would love to hear from you, regardless of where you are. If you do decide to send us a report, please let us know where you are, because that's important when it comes to phenology. Thanks for listening, and thanks for contributing. We really like the student phenology reports that are made possible by our producer, Charlie Mitchell. Thanks very much to all of you. We receive support from the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association, protecting the future of deer and deer hunting through habitat, education, advocacy, and legislation. More at mndeerhunters.com.
John, our question of the week is, do you remember the first time you voted? Where did you vote? What was it like? You don't have to tell us who you voted for. Off the top of your head, do you remember?
I'm digging through. I voted, let's see, the first time I was eligible to vote would have been Nixon and McGovern, which was in 72, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
That would be my first presidential election.
Do you remember, were you in Grand Rapids? Were you in Minneapolis?
At the time, let's see, in 72, I probably voted in Minneapolis.
Ah, all right. We'd love to hear from you. We're getting ready for a debut of a new program. It's coming up this Friday. It's an occasional call-in program called Dialed In, and it'll be on the next 3 weeks as our news team is assembling coverage of the upcoming elections. Don't forget that early voting is now open for the November 5th general election throughout the state of Minnesota. And you can find a very comprehensive election guide right now at our website at kaxc.org.
We receive support from Dragonfly Coffee, located in Central Square Mall in Grand Rapids, featuring a scratch bakery and offering espresso, bubble tea, and more. Empowering inclusion and community through employment, special order pricing, and more at drinkdragonfly.com.
Coming up in the next half hour, we talk weather with Tornado Bob. Make sure you stay tuned.
We receive support from L&M Fleet Supply, carrying a variety of products for your next outdoor adventure with 13 locations across the Northland. More online at lmsupply.com.
Coming up at 9 o'clock this morning, we are on the river, and today your host will be Sarah Sarah.
You are listening to 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids and 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji. We are Northern Community Radio, telling the stories of the people and land of Northern Minnesota through music, news, conversation, and events. Operating translator K210DR in Brainerd at 89.9. Listen at KAXE.org or on your smart speaker. We need people like you to support this local media. Text the word donate to 218-326-1234. Thank you.
Lots of things going on in our region, including the United Way of a Thousand Lakes. They're teaming up with restaurants in Itasca County for Dining United. It's now through November 21st. Each restaurant will give a portion of their proceeds to the United Way. You can find complete details at uwlakes.org. Coming up next, we'll have news headlines from National Public Radio. We've got Tornado Bob joining us in the studio. There is clouds in the sky is what we are seeing right now, but it's supposed to clear off today. Highs 48 to 53, mostly clear tonight. Lows 21 to 33 around our region.